This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
A warm hello to all you hellbound infidels. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And we survived another April Fool's Day. We atheists made it through another one of those, and now we're headlong into spring. Free Thought Radio is brought to you by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest group, a fast-growing group of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate and to show the world that we non-believers are here too, and we have reasons for why we believe and why we don't believe. Later in the show, we're going to talk about something very tragic, the consequences of faith healing. But that reminds me of a joke about faith healing. Oral Roberts, you know who he is? The faith healer, Oral Roberts.
Of course.
Okay. He died, went to heaven, and there's this long line, but St. Peter came out and said, Oral, come up to the front of the line. They cut all the red tape. They brought him right in, and he says, oh, this is first-class treatment, you know. They opened the gates. He just walks right in, and they said, forget all that. We're going to take you right to the throne room of God. So he goes right in. He goes up the big steps right to the throne, and there's God at the throne. And God says, Oral Roberts, I am so glad that you are here. I have this pain in my lower back.
Okay, and speaking of a moment of levity, later in the show we'll celebrate the April birthday of irreverent songwriter Tom Lehrer by listening to a performance where he sings his own classic song, Vatican Rag.
The subject of our interview today will be the child homicide via prayer. Our guest is Sean Francis Peters. He's the author of a new book called When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing, Children, and the Law.
There were two recent deaths of children whose parents prayed for them instead of seeking appropriate medical attention. Both of these were tragic cases but unnecessary deaths, and one was the death of an 11-year-old girl from untreated diabetes in Wisconsin about 2 weeks ago, and the other a toddler whose Oregon parents just last week were indicted on charges of manslaughter and criminal misconduct of their 15-month-old daughter. And we'll talk about what's wrong with the state of Wisconsin and so many other states, which provide an exemption to homicide and child abuse and neglect laws, allowing parents to let their children suffer or die of medical neglect if it's in the name of faith.
And there's more sobering news ahead in Free Thought Radio's weekly Theocracy Alert. Last Monday, March the 31st, was the deadline for televangelists to respond to Senator Charles Grassley's inquiry into excessive spending by six ministries. Grassley, who's a Republican from Iowa, is the top Republican in the Senate Finance Committee. Last fall, he contacted several quote-unquote prosperity preachers with questions over their lavish lifestyles. Only one really was cooperating, so earlier this month, joined by Finance Committee Chair Max Baucus, a Democrat from Montana, Grassley sent another round of letters to those televangelists. Grassley and Baucus are seeking details on how these tax-exempt churches are spending their money on jet airplanes, mansions with very fancy toilets.
And here's how one of the televangelists who is part of the probe has been responding.
This is the word that will become flesh. This is the word that will become healing. This is the word that becomes massive wealth.
That's Kenneth Copeland talking about how if you give your life to Jesus, you will become wealthy. He was asked recently about was he using his private jet, was he using the corporate jet for private purposes? And listen to what he said.
That's none of your business.
Goodness. And here's another preacher under investigation.
See, it's easy for a person to sit back who ain't never been there
It's easy for you to say that God don't want you rich, but for some folks, God is the only way out of their lack poverty situation, and he is a father that wants you whole in every area of your life, but he also wants you to have money in your pocketbook so you can have authority in this world.
God wants you to have money in your pocketbook so you can give it to Creflo or Creflo Dollar. What a name. So-called prosperity preacher under investigation for an overlavish lifestyle.
His last name is really Dollar?
It really is.
D-O-L-L-A-R. Several others of those preachers, they have provided documents, and or else they're promising to, but those two, Kenneth Copeland and Creflo Dollar, are the real holdouts.
So it may be a showdown.
When it comes to Theocracy Alert Abroad, we must report that the author, Taslima Nasreen, who has been under a death fatwa since the mid-1990s, is in exile again. Run out of her home in Calcutta last November following violent riots, Taslima was in enforced hiding. With her health suffering, she left India in mid-March to return to Sweden. Sweden is where she first fled when Bangladeshi holy men originally accused her of blasphemy. She spent more than 15 years in exile.
And right now we're listening to the background music of the film Fitna. Of course, this is the Arabian dance part of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. The film Fitna by Geert Wilders, who's a Dutch anti-immigration member of parliament there, who has also had a death fatwa pronounced against him. And last week he released his much anticipated, I think much dreaded by the Dutch government, 15-minute internet film called Fitna. And you can still find it, we think, if you Google, although it's been removed by many websites. And we would urge you to watch it and make up your own mind, but you are forewarned that it shows a lot of death, people being killed, terrorism.
And Fitna is pronounced F-I-T-N-A. We do have mixed feelings about
it's
this.
It's spelled. We don't know how to pronounce it, do we?
Fitna is spelled F-I-T-N-A. And I watched it, and I had a lot of mixed feelings, positive and negative. It shows a lot of brutal footage of terrorism and destruction by Islamist terrorists, from the Twin Towers to footage of beheadings and photographs of corpses, and footage of various imams pronouncing medieval things about gays, women, and non-Muslims.
And what it does is cite several barbaric Quranic Bible verses, and you have to add that these verses can be matched by anything in the Old Testament, which is accepted by both Jewish and Christian faiths. And of course, the Muslim religion shares much of the Old Testament in common with Jews and Christians, and that's something that's often overlooked. These are all three Abrahamic religions. So I'm all for Quranic criticism, Bible criticism, knowing your enemy, knowing what's in these so-called holy books. But certainly anyone could do a similar propaganda film against Judaism or against Christianity. And in fact, I would say that Christiane Amanpour on CNN last summer did excellent documentaries about the harm of all of these religions in the world today.
Well, you could find video clips of these modern-day preachers who are calling for the death of unbelievers and gays in that. I found it a bit unsettling, though, to hear that the Dutch prime minister renounced this film at a news conference, saying, and this is a quote, "We believe it serves no purpose other than to offend."
And I think if you had a death fatwa against you, any of our listeners, you also might very well resent the religion that's represented by these so-called holy men who are after you. So you can see Geert Wilders' perturbation. And why don't we go to a distressing part, an early part of the film. This is a clip about the Twin Towers. Well, that is very, very distressing. And the film traces the growing number of Muslims in the Netherlands. So this does show why there's a cultural conflict there. There were 54 in 1909 to 58,000 in 1990 to 944,000 in 2004. So this clash of cultures is inevitable. And of course, there were Theo van Gogh has been killed because he did a film about the problems of the Muslim religion and religion. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who co-did who co-directed that film with him, is under a death fatwa herself. So there's a lot of problems right now.
And we should point out that her approach to the problem is different from Wilders. She's not so much anti-immigration as she is anti-superstition. Let the immigrants come, but if they're going to adapt to Western society, they have to give up some of their primitive views. This is a pretty effective piece of propaganda, this movie Fitna. It ends very unsubtly with the words, "Stop Islamization." It certainly raises bona fide questions. However unpleasantly, it depicts real-life events and the true statements of some exponents of Islam. They're not all that crazy, and we know a lot of wonderful, good Muslims in the world, but there are some extremists who denounce democracy, denounce gays and women. They speak of taking over Europe in the name of Islam. Does making a film like this give any believers in Islam the right to kill its maker? Does Geert Wilders have a right as a member of parliament to be anti-immigration or even anti-Islam without having holy men order his death?
So there's an interesting question to raise. I'd like to have seen him talk about the necessity of separation of church and state rather than just being anti-Muslim. Free Thought Radio will be right back for Vatican Rag and to speak with the Wisconsin author Sean Francis Peters about his new book, When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing Children in the Law, about two recent unnecessary deaths of children whose parents prayed for them instead of taking them to the doctor and they died.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. And now it's time for Free Thought Radio's Pagan Pulpit with ex-Reverend Dan Barker.
All you have to do is walk into any children's hospital, and you know there is no God. Loving parents are desperate for anything that will cure their children. Many of those families praying to their God, and most of those children dying tragic deaths. Not only are these statistics clear evidence that there's no God, or at least no loving God, they're also putting the lie to the Bible, which plainly promises that those prayers will be answered. In the fifth chapter of James, we find these words, "Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church. Let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord, and the prayer of faith will heal the sick, and the Lord will raise him up." In Matthew 21, Jesus said, "If you have faith, you can say to this mountain, 'Be removed and cast into the sea,' it shall be done. All things whatsoever you shall ask for in prayer, believing, you shall receive." All things, it says. The Bible is filled with stories of miracles and healings performed by Jesus and his followers. And not only are true believers obligated to accept these ancient myths as factual, they're actually expected to outperform Jesus. In John 14, Jesus said, "He who believes in me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do." So the age of miracles is not over, according to the Bible. "Whatsoever you shall ask in my name," Jesus said, "that will I do. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it," John 14. These Bible passages are so obviously false, repeatedly disproved in front of our eyes, that it makes us wonder how any modern believer could take them seriously. It's a moral bankruptcy that replaces true human compassion with supernatural spookery. Replacing medical care with prayer is a criminal act. As Robert Greene Ingersoll said, "The hands that help are better far than lips that pray."
That was Dan Barker and his Pagan Pulpit. I'm here with him in the studio, Annie Laurie Gellar. And we'll be talking a little later in the show about more of these dangers of faith healing.
But first, let's celebrate the upcoming birthday of the satiric songwriter Tom Lehrer, who was born on April the 9th, 1928. He wrote for NBC's That Was the Week That Was, if you remember from the 1960s, and was one of those most famous songs that he wrote was called, and he performed it on the TV show, it was called Vatican Rag.
First you get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make do whatever steps you want if you have cleared them with the pontiff. Everybody say his own, Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican Rag. Get in line in that processional, step into that small confessional. There the guy who's got religion will tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer, drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8, time to transubstantiate. So get down upon your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen when in Rome, do like a Roman. Ave Maria, gee, it's good to see ya. Getting ecstatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican Rag.
That was Tom Lehrer from a live TV performance in the 1960s singing his irreverent ditty, Vatican Rag. And that was kind of cute, wasn't it, Dan, that he made a little mistake. And sometimes when you're playing the song,
I do the same mistake.
You do the same mistake, so that should make you feel better.
This is Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back to hear a timely discussion on the needless tragedy of a modern version of child sacrifice by Bible-believing parents. We're going to talk with Sean Francis Peters, the author of the book, When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing, Children, and the Law.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're back with Free Thought Radio. We're back for the second half of this weekend's program.
Our guest today has been very busy fielding media complaints, media calls, the last several weeks. Sean Francis Peters teaches writing and U.S. history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The media are calling him because of his new book, When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing, Children, and the Law, which was published late last year by Oxford University Press. And Sean Francis Peters is getting a lot of press calls because there have been two prominent cases in the news where children have died because Bible-believing parents have used prayer instead of taking them to doctors. And so welcome very much to our show, Sean.
Oh, thank you for having me. I certainly wish the circumstances were slightly different in terms of the recent news and some of the things I've been, as you mentioned, talking about quite frequently.
So you teach writing and U.S. history at the university. So what got you interested in a topic like this?
You know, I've written a couple of books previously on religion and law and about very different things, actually. I wrote a book on the Jehovah's Witnesses and their legal cases in the 1930s and 40s. And I wrote a book on Wisconsin versus Yoder, which involved the Amish in Wisconsin in the late 60s. And so I've been interested in this intersection between faith and law. And it dawned on me after I did my first two books that there were a lot of children's rights and parental rights issues in those. And those two things kind of got me pointed in the direction of faith healing and looking at that from a similar perspective, exploring not only the ethical issues, moral issues, religious issues, but the legal issues, too, which are pretty complex.
Now, you're based at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. That's where our show is broadcasting from, Madison, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is one of many states in the United States that has an exemption in the law for parents who do not seek medical attention, you know, for their children because of their religious beliefs.
Exactly, yeah. There are over 30 states currently that have similar exemptions. And I want to be clear that these aren't kind of murky or vague provisions that, you know, crafty lawyers kind of read things into. They're very explicit protections specifically for religious healing. Wisconsin, in our criminal code that outlines crimes against children under physical abuse of a child, there is a subsection of that that says treatment through prayer. And so it's there, and it's not something that is being read into the statute somehow. It's very clearly there in black and white.
So the state is actually accepting prayer as an alternative medical treatment then?
An alternative to medical treatment, yeah. Wow. And the statute, you know, not to be too legalistic, but it's worth talking about it. The statute reads, a person is not guilty of an offense under this section solely because he or she provides a child with treatment by spiritual means through prayer alone for healing in accordance with the religious method of healing permitted elsewhere in the statute in lieu of medical or surgical treatment. So, translation, you can provide prayer rather than medicine.
And this would be, this wording would be similar in the other 29 states that have this exemption, I'm assuming.
Yeah, similar, not obviously word for word, but more or less the same.
And this was as a result of the Christian Science Lobby, is my understanding.
It's my understanding, too. You know, I haven't looked at the specific genesis of the Wisconsin proviso that I just described, but I've looked at a bunch of other states, and many of them came to be in the early part of the 20th century through lobbying by the Christian Science Church. The Christian Science Church, as you know, they're very adroit politically, and in Wisconsin, it's interesting, you know, we've had actually a governor, Scott McCallum, was a Christian Scientist, so they're not obscure people politically in our state, and so I would be surprised if this exemption existed for any other reason than specifically to protect Christian Scientists. Now, it is not written specifically with the words Christian Science in it, so it covers a variety of religious healing practices. And the case currently in northern Wisconsin, those folks are not Christian Scientists, but this law, it appears, might affect the way authorities proceed against them legally.
Let's talk about that case for people who might not be familiar with it. A few weeks ago, an 11-year-old child named Madeline Cara Newman, I think she was known as Cara, died, in my opinion, for unforgivable reasons. She had untreated, really undiagnosed, diabetes. But her parents said that that all of this was in God's hands and that they simply need to heal now from her death. They are not apologizing to anyone.
They need to heal. She didn't
right.
heal, but they need to heal.
And they lived in Weston, Wisconsin, and now the authorities, they're doing the investigation, and there was a headline recently saying that there might be charges forthcoming. So we'll see what happens with that case. But you've written and investigated so many of these deaths. When you die from diabetes at 11 years old, what does this mean?
It means that you've suffered over a long period of time. It's not, and I've looked, and there was a specific manifestation of diabetes in this case called diabetic ketoacidosis. And I actually wrote extensively about another case from 1995 in Pennsylvania involving a young girl named Shannon Nixon who died from, it's called DKA medically. If you look it up, that's what it's called, and that's the shorthand for it. And I know from looking at Shannon Nixon's case and other cases, it's not like a stroke or a heart attack where it's a sudden catastrophic illness that kind of takes you in a couple of days. It's a prolonged and agonizing way to die. And I really can't, saying this as a parent, I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. I can't imagine a more tragic and just heartrending way for my kids to die than under those particular circumstances. Now, there is a factual dispute in this case as to how long the child was sick, what the parents knew, and when they knew it. And I think that's one of the things investigators are looking at now is how did the parents approach this particular... They knew that their daughter was sick. The question is, when did they know it, and did they understand how severe her illness was? I will say another fact that has come out in this case is that the parents removed Kara from public school in December and began homeschooling her starting this past semester of school. And to me, that raises a red flag for me in terms of her condition as far back as earlier this winter, because it's possible, I'm not saying that this is necessarily what happened, but it's possible that the parents did not want outsiders scrutinizing her downward spiraling health, and that's why they began school. I don't know whether that's true, but if I were an investigator, I would really try to figure out the genesis of her diabetes and specifically how it related to her withdrawal from public schools, because that's a place where abuse is detected. Is it's, you know, a kid shows up and the teacher says, hey, wait a minute, something's not right with this kid. Something is wrong at home. And we didn't have that potential warning from a public school because the child was withdrawn.
And I think that is really very probable, because they were quoting, the newspapers were quoting medical experts saying that she would have started to decline at least 6 months ago, and there would have been symptoms starting at least 6 months ago.
So, sure. And in my experience, again, I've looked at several hundred of these cases, not all of them diabetes cases, but all variety of maladies dating back, you know, 150 years. And there, my experience in terms of the pattern of these illnesses and what happens is that it is a long, it is a process. You know, children will get leukemia, for instance. And leukemia, it doesn't just sort of happen overnight. There are symptoms that are apparent to most close observers. And obviously, you know, we as a society, we want and we expect parents to do that. And by law, generally, parents have a legal obligation to provide for the health and well-being of their children. What's going to be complicated in this particular case is that the part of the statute that I was referencing earlier with the religious healing exemption, I don't know how that will affect this prosecution, whether it will confound this prosecution, whether the prosecutor will find a way to get around that or not.
Your book is called When Prayer Fails, and let's talk about whether you think prayer succeeds or fails when we come back after this break.
Sure.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll finish talking with Sean Francis Peters, author of When Prayer Fails, right after the break.
Nothing fails like prayer. Nothing fails like prayer. Use your mind and you will find that nothing fails like prayer. Nothing fails like prayer. Nothing fails like prayer. Use your mind and you will find that nothing fails like prayer.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio, and we're talking with Sean Francis Peters, the author of the book When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing, Children, and the Law.
And Sean, we were talking during the break about this other breaking news case involving followers of Christ parents who are being indicted in the state of Oregon for letting their little toddler die. I think it was blood infection and untreated bronchial pneumonia that was fully treatable. There's a whole history with this followers of Christ. I guess you could call it a cult or church, isn't there?
Absolutely. This isn't the first case involving this particular church. The Oregonian, which is the paper in Portland, did an incredible expose about 10 years ago on this church, and they found that it was around 50 children over the years in this church had died from basically medically preventable ailments. And they not only found that 50 children had died, but that no parents had been prosecuted in this church for abuse, neglect, or manslaughter. And they spoke with prosecutors and said, you know, what's the story? Why aren't charges being brought? And prosecutors pointed to Oregon's religious healing exemption and said, we're confused, we don't know what to do. And legislators in Oregon changed their law. They removed, and not without a fight by the Christian Science Church to keep that provision in there. They changed the law, and now this case, the young woman who died was named Ava Worthington. This prosecutor, her parents were charged with manslaughter, so it's a pretty severe charge. This is going to be the first test of Oregon law since it was revised. And so that's the difference between what's going on in Oregon and what's going on in Wisconsin. In Oregon, I see that as being a more straightforward case legally because there isn't this potential exemption for religious healing. Wisconsin, I think that might complicate things. In Oregon, I don't think so.
But here, certainly they could charge the parents with some form of neglect, even if they didn't charge them with something more specific.
Or negligence.
Negligence.
They do. And what is complicated is that when you charge, you could charge them under a part of the statute that doesn't include the religious healing mm-hmm. exemption. On appeal, the courts often have a problem with that as a due process of law issue because behavior that is protected under one part of the code, right, the healing is protected under the physical abuse statute, might not be protected under manslaughter. And so as a legal argument, the argument is, well, I didn't know which part of the law I was supposed to follow because it says religious healing is okay in one part, but there is no protection of it under the other. As a legal argument, that actually has proven effective. And appellate courts, when they get to that problem, will say the legislature needs to change the law.
The legislature does need to change the law. It is time. I mean, there was another case here in the state of Wisconsin where there was a great deal of hue and cry, we must do something about this. And one of those cases was this little boy, I think maybe a 10-year-old boy in Milwaukee, that died during exorcisms. Do you recall that case?
Yeah, Terrence Cottrell was the boy, and he was asphyxiated during a botched exorcism by the minister of his church in 2003. And that case was, the circumstances were so gruesome and kind of overwhelming, and that wasn't it wasn't an absence of medical care so much as it was the presence of, you know, physical force. But even that case, right, is very obvious. I mean, the minister lay on top of this boy.
And he was this big guy.
Right.
And squeezed, this little boy.
Squeezed the breath out of this boy. He was actually a toddler. He was only maybe 2 years old. Even then, that case was only charged as physical abuse. The minister got 30 months in prison and 7.5 years of probation. So when we're looking at this new case in terms of the severity and what might be charged, with that earlier Hemphill case as a yardstick, I wonder what will be charged and how severely they will be charged. And also, who will be charged? Will both parents be charged? Prosecutors don't like to charge mothers, for instance. They tend to have a more sympathetic view of mothers, but although it seems in this case that the mother was much more active in the church and was much more took more of a leadership role in the care of the child.
Yeah, so those she's are the all... one making these awful statements about, we just need to heal. Like, well, what about their daughter?
Exactly. And prosecutors, I spoke with a lot of prosecutors and reviewed their statements, and they hate politically putting people like that on trial. They hate putting grieving parents on trial.
But those parents are only grieving because of their own negligence and their own lack of compassion for their own child.
Oh,
to watch their child die and do nothing, I think is just, you know, they were consulting a faith healer over the phone. They knew something was wrong.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's the challenge for the prosecutor in this case. Jill Falstead is the district attorney in Marathon County, and she has this, fairly soon this will all kind of cross her desk, and she'll have to make a determination
Well, let's hope she makes a determination that will help send a message to save other children.
Right.
We've been talking with Sean Francis Peters about his new book, When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing Children and the Law. Thank you so much for joining our show today, Sean.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You can hear all these shows, archived and podcast, at ffrf.org/radio.
We thank our guest today, Sean Francis Peters, for talking with us about this case and his book, When Prayer Fails, Faith Healing Children and the Law. And we'll be back next week. And let's go out with a quick rhyme for the irreverent by lyricist E.Y. Harburg.
A nose is a nose is a nose. Mother, mother, tell me, mother, mother, tell me, please. Did God, who made the flowers and trees, also provide the allergies?
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.